This is the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast with Andy Benoit and your host, John Engel.
Hello once again to the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast for Week 10. I'm John Engel at Engel's Angle on Twitter, along with MMQB analyst Andy Benoit. You can follow him at Andy underscore Benoit. Andy, lots of games we have to get to so far. We have a James Laurinaitis interview that you did earlier this week that's very interesting. I hope you stick around for that a little bit later in the show. But first off, the Chicago Bears, they're coming off a bye after getting shellacked by Tom Brady for 354 passing yards, 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. It wasn't good. And now you face Aaron Rodgers, which could possibly be worse. And Andy, for years, the Bears were known for this, you know, stingy defense. And now it's not so much. 23rd in the league in passing, allowing 262.3 yards through the air per game. You wrote something about, you know, teams having success with the man-to-man coverage schemes earlier this week. My question is for you, is the zone defense, is it dead? Are we completely reliant on man coverage now in the NFL?
Well, to put it on the Bears, if you were to watch the Bears against the Patriots, that film, you'd say, yeah, it's dead, because the Bears stayed in these vanilla base zones, and the reason they were base zones is because the Patriots hardly even got to third down, so there's no need for sub packages. They stayed in those base zones, single high, and the cornerbacks had to play off coverage, and Tom Brady just destroyed them with hard play action. And Brandon LaFell on the outside against the cornerbacks, and then the safeties and linebackers inside getting eaten up by Rob Gronkowski. In that sense, zone defense is dead. You need to have a pass rush. And this has always been true, but you need to have a pass rush in order to play zone defense. And right now, the Bears are the worst thing you can be as a defense, and that's no pass rush trying to play zone.
Yeah, getting nothing out of Jared Allen so far this season, that free agent acquisition previously with the Vikings. But when it comes to a team that's so centered on tight ends like the Patriots are, does it really matter if between zone and man coverage? Because that's what I was wondering when I was thinking about this topic earlier this week, is when you're that big and that strong at tight end, does it make a difference man to zone?
I still think, yeah, it still makes a difference, because with the man-to-man, you technically have the ability to control the matchups a little bit. And in fact, Laurinaitis talked about this. He'll get into that, because he's a linebacker that gets stuck playing against wide receivers at times. And that's what's going to happen in this game with the Bears. Last week, it was Gronkowski getting them. They're not going to, you know, Andrew Corliss is a nice tight end, but he's not the mismatch maker. The Packers are a three-receiver team with Devontae Adams, Randall Cobb, Jordy Nelson. And that's where the Bears will find problems. And my guess is going to be Randall Cobb, who got them at the end of last season. I think he'll get them again in this game, because he's the guy they don't have an answer for if he's going to keep lining up inside. And so to answer your question, John, it still matters. It still matters, because you want to be able to minimize it. But we could talk all day about the troubles of facing a guy like Rob Gronkowski or even a guy like Randall Cobb.
Sure,
I mean, good players are going to cause matchup problems. It's a matter of what you do for it. And it goes back to, as a zone defense, the only chances you have to influence matchups on your end is with your pass rushers. And you'd better have better defensive ends than they have offensive tackles. And right now, the Bears do not. Willie Young's having a very good year.
He is.
And that's no surprise.
He leads the team in sacks, doesn't he?
He's like 7 or 8 in the year, something like that. He's up near the top of the whole league, in fact, or he was for a while. And I thought he would be their best pass rusher coming into the year. I thought there's a reason Jared Allen was available. I've never been a big fan of Lamar Houston, even before the incident he had Patriot game. Something has to change, though, with Chicago. Maybe Jay Ratliff gets going. I don't know.
So you're saying for the Bears defense to get in a successful path here, it has to start with that pass rush. It's not going to – I mean, you mentioned that the zone defense may be dead, but the personnel isn't there for the Bears to turn completely into a man coverage defense.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, they have – it's not like they're totally inept and can't play man-to-man, but when you are a zone-based team, you tend to draft zone guys. And an example, like Kyle Fuller is a much better zone player than man player at this point. He's probably going to be a very good man player.
And doesn't that show up a lot in red zone situations too, a guy that's maybe more suitable for the zone? Because I think we saw Kyle Fuller in the last couple of weeks get kind of stuck on his own playing that man coverage role in the red zone, and he just looks uncomfortable and not suited.
Well, I'm trying to remember the plays you're you're talking about. I mean, I know what you're – I vaguely remember that. The one nice thing about the red zone as a zone team is you can get away with it a little more there because with the end of the field coming with the back baseline, the field gets condensed, and so the zones get smaller.
Sure.
It's the teams that spread out that really hurt you. And Green Bay is a great example. We're going to I guarantee we see this on Sunday night. They use a lot of what are called plus split formations. And that is with the wide receivers aligned outside of the field numbers. A minus split would be the wide receivers inside of the field numbers. So these plus split formations, these spread out formations, when you do that, you spread out the zones of the opponent. And that's how Baltimore destroyed Tampa Bay earlier this year, for example. Bucks coached by former Bears coach Lovie Smith. The Bears had trouble with this, I remember, last year against the Lions. They did it with Calvin Johnson a lot. I think we'll see plus split formations from Green Bay, and Aaron Rodgers will get to choose his matchups. And in that sense, it'll be matchup on matchup, a guy on a guy. But those defenders are going to be in zone technique, and so they're not going to be – if you're going to play one-on-one, you want to be able to play with man-to-man technique. If you're playing with zone technique, you're not able to focus all of your energy into stopping the guy. You have field spacing to worry about. So this doesn't look like a good matchup for the Bears.
No, it doesn't. So then if you're the Bears, then what do you have to do to win this game? I think that's the real question.
You got to score 35.
It's just going to be outscoring, huh?
I think that's your best chance at it. And this game's in Green Bay. Not that that matters. Green Bay and Chicago are pretty similar playing surfaces and areas, but I think you got to score 35 points. I think Matt Forte has to get 8 or 9 catches and 15 to 20 carries, and you got to have Marshall and Jeffrey do their thing. We know how the Bears go on offense.
Yeah, and then the team both the Bears and the Packers are looking up to in the NFC North is the Detroit Lions now, as unbelievable as that may have sounded a couple of years ago, but coming off of a bye.
Even a couple months ago.
That's true, too. They're healthier with Calvin Johnson now, and he's back, and they sit at 6-2. So we've been teased by the Lions before in the past, only to see them kind of falter in the second half of the season. I mean, look at last year. But why should we believe that this season will be different? Is it all rested on the defense that we can finally trust in the Detroit Lions?
I think that would be my answer. I mean, this offense has been without Calvin Johnson and at times without Reggie Bush. And I think Drake Bell missed a game.
Yeah.
And they have stayed afloat. And what I like, and I know this sounds weird, when teams can win games when they don't particularly play well, that to me is always a real positive sign because you're not going to play well every week. And this game that Detroit won 2 weeks ago, I believe they're coming off a bye, you said, right? And they didn't play
yes.
last week.
Yeah.
So their last game was against Atlanta in London. That was a choppy
Very
game
odd.
For them.
That was an odd game.
Yeah,
I don't
the Falcons kind of gave
that game.
Right, the Falcons kind of gave that one away. But the Lions, that's the ultimate eke out a victory game. So that's impressive to me. That's something they have not always done in the past. That's one part. To answer the second part, the more important part, their defense is very, very good, and they were once a zone-based defense as well. And under new coordinator Terrell Austin, they've become more diverse, and they're not a man-to-man team. And all these teams do a variation of all this stuff. But they're not a zone team strictly anymore. They're more versatile on the back end.
Well, and they're taking on the Dolphins this week, 5-3. Miami has been kind of a bit of a surprise for us, and they beat the Chargers last week.
Well,
37
some of us.
Oh yeah,
some of us thought they were a wild card team.
Yeah, about 10, 11 games. All right,
and this is where someone brings up the Buccaneers for me now.
No,
now,
I wasn't.
Now
do
I'm
that.
Back to even. I'm just thinking of Twitter person.
I was going to actually say the Dolphins' success. A lot of it has come from their new trust in this zone read with Ryan Tannehill and Joe Philbin has relied on that in the last three games in which the Dolphins have been hot. And so the Detroit Lions coming in as the second best defense against the run at 74 yards a game. Do you think that helps against this zone read, or is that more of just an interior statistic that they can stop the conventional run?
I think it helps against the zone read for two reasons. They have linebackers who can really run well, and it's not just DeAndre Levy who's having an all-pro type season. It's also Tahir Whitehead, the guy who replaced Steven Tulloch. He hate to say this about a guy when a guy tears an ACL, but Whitehead has been an upgrade over Tulloch,
wow.
And I would expect
and
him
you
to
were
keep
loving
that job.
Tulloch.
Yeah, I like Tulloch. I don't know if I've ever been in love. I love DeAndre Levy. I don't know if I've ever fallen hard for Steven Tulloch. But Miami's game. So anyway, they have guys that can run. The Miami's read option game will be challenged by the speed of those guys, and also James Ahedibo, the safety, is a guy that can get down in the box if need be. So it's a matter of how they choose to defend Tannehill on the read option. That's not the main thing though with Miami that you have to take away right now. Ryan Tannehill's playing lights out as a passer, and I mean, he carved up San Diego, and I think that's the concern is, are you going to be stable enough on the back end? And Miami's not the most difficult team to defend through the air, but we've seen when they spread the ball around, and Tannehill had 8 different guys catch passes from him in the first half last week. When they played that brand of football, they can be tough to stop because they're a deeper team than people realize.
Well, I think it's obvious, though, that Tannehill feels a lot more comfortable when he is that rushing threat too, because he's what is it now? It's 4 of the last 5 the Dolphins have won, and in those games he's rushed for over 40 yards, 30
per game,
35 against Oakland. Yeah, so yeah. I mean, it's clear emphasis. This didn't come out of nowhere. It wasn't just part of the offense developing. Philbin certainly saw that the run game with Tannehill incorporated wasn't being used, and now they've made a transition and it's working.
Yeah, it is working, and the numbers, as you just said, they backed that up. And Tannehill's a better athlete than people realize, and these young guys who
college wide receiver.
Yeah, I know, and it's so easily forgotten. These young guys who are athletes, it would make sense that they'd be more comfortable if they're able to run around a little bit, because it's just, I mean, just think about if you're playing quarterback with your buddies, you know, it's an athletic intuition that you have. I mean, that's my guess at it. I've never been a quarterback.
Yeah, and like Tannehill, the Kansas City Chiefs do have a quarterback that does have that mobile aspect to his game in Alex Smith, and they're on the road with the Buffalo Bills, and that's a team Miami is contending with in that AFC, and a surprising 5-3 record for the two of them, and hosting another surprising 5-3 team in the Chiefs. So, Andy, which of these clubs is more believable as an AFC contender?
Between the Chiefs and Bills, you mean?
Yeah.
Because I think Miami is more believable than both of them. But answer this question, I want to say Buffalo because they have here's our theme for the show. They've got the ability to play man-to-man coverage.
Oh, here we go.
They're very – well, they have two things. They have a good – they have a great secondary, in fact. I think it's a great one. It's a low-end great one, you know, like the 5th or 6th best in the league, something like that. It's very deep, and so that's that one aspect. The second aspect, their linebacking core is getting better, but up front, the second thing is that their pass rush is tremendous. And both of those work off of each other. It's a complete defense, and they don't have a lot of stuff they do schematically. So they can be consistent week in and week out because they're not dependent on outsmarting you. They can out-execute you. So having said that, that's about the Bills. Now, we know their offense is a week-to-week proposition, especially with the running backs out. Kansas City, though, they're getting healthier right now. And every time I watch them on film, I see limitations throughout the personnel and all these things they have to work around.
On both sides of the ball?
Yeah, more on offense, but yeah. And I see them work around them just absolutely masterfully, especially on offense. That Andy Reid is an outstanding game planner and play designer and play caller. And he doesn't get thought of as that much. He gets talked about for his timeout usage and challenges. And
yeah.
All these... really, frankly, ancillary issues, not that they're not important, but as far as making the meat and potatoes of the game plan each week, Andy Reid is as good as anybody, and we've seen what he's done with Alex Smith. And some of the plays they've designed this year for Travis Kelce, we'd have to be a television show for it because we'd need to show the visuals, but it's as good as anything you'll see with football and creating mismatches for one guy. And what's most remarkable is they don't have a bunch of receivers around him that are creating distractions.
Well, and I think you just kind of told the story of why I think Kansas City is much more poised for the playoffs than Buffalo anyway, because, I mean, that defense, you were talking about Buffalo's defense being great in man coverage. Kansas City's defense is the best defense in the league right now against the pass, allowing 199.4 yards per game, and that offense seems much more predictable, much more consistent than Buffalo's. So I almost think you in explaining Kansas City, you kind of rebuked your pick of Buffalo.
I didn't know the past. That surprises me. Usually I have a sense for those numbers. I would never guess.
Eric Berry's starting to get more and more healthy. And
right.
It's Sean Smith. You've mentioned him in the past weeks too.
Yeah, I like Sean Smith. The guy I really like on that team, I would never have guessed Kansas City's number one there.
Yep.
Are they been getting thrown at enough? I mean.
I mean, you face San Diego, you face St. Louis, New York. I mean, they're throwing the ball. They're getting rid of Miami, beat Miami. Denver. You're facing some quarterbacks, man.
The guy I really like in that secondary is
New England. I didn't even mention that. I mean, you take down Brady, you should get something for it.
Philip Gaines, the third-round rookie cornerback. He's played the last 3 weeks, more snaps each week, or it's felt like it. He certainly played his most snaps last week, and he's been absolutely sensational. Press man defender, inside or outside. Nothing more needs to be said. I haven't seen a bad play from Philip Gaines yet, and I've seen a lot of great ones.
We talked about with the Bears that pass rush really having to come along, and Kansas City's gotten that from Justin Houston. I mean, he leads the NFL with 12 sacks. How different is that Kansas City defense without Justin Houston's production? As we've talked about over the year, they've had a lot of losses on defense, and Justin Houston hasn't skipped a beat.
No, he hasn't, and because of those losses, they've been, you know, having Eric Berry back helps, and they'll use him more
ton.
And more.
Yeah.
Because what I'm getting at is that they have done a lot of manufacturing blitz pressure under Bob Sutton the last few years, I guess this year and last year. More so last year, though. And this year, with some of the injuries out, Derek Johnson's been out. I think that's compromised a little bit of what they do with their sub-package blitzes. Not a lot, but a little bit. But they've been a little more dependent on their edge rushers just getting straight pressure out of four-man rushes this year. And Tom Bahali's, I don't know if he's getting old or what he is, he's not Tom Bahali every single down.
They've had to
anymore.
Be a lot more creative with him, huh?
Yeah, they move him around, and they've always done that a little bit, but he doesn't flash every down like he used to. So Houston is now – it used to be Hawley was the number one, Houston is the number two. It was pretty clear-cut. That's now flipped. Hawley can still play, don't get me wrong, but Justin Houston is their most important pass rusher, and because of what you've said about this being the number one pass defense, and certainly the pass rush has a lot to do with that, you could make the argument Houston's their most important – maybe their most important player on the whole team.
You know, even this being a road game for Kansas City, and they're not great against the run, but now Buffalo doesn't have a run game, really.
Yeah.
It's Anthony Dixon. And so what are your thoughts on the Bills going forward without C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson for the time being? And it doesn't seem like it's going to work out very well.
Well, I mean, Dixon's not a flashy guy. I think you can survive with him, though. I mean, it's going to hurt their screen game more than anything. Because they did a lot with Spiller and Jackson in the short area passing game. You lose that dimension of the offense. But they've been okay so far. They've stayed above water with Dixon. And he's one of those guys. Drake Bell was like this last year. Here's a second Drake Bell reference in one podcast. He was like this last year. They look slow because they're stocky. They've got dreadlocks, so they look bigger up top than they really are. Like they look almost round. They're not that slow. They're not slow. They're not fast, but they're not plodders. And I think Dixon's a little bit like that. Kansas City's run defense was very good last week as well against the New York Jets, or at least I don't know how the numbers came out, but Don Terry Poe flashed his all-pro level play, which he's been known to do.
Jumping over to the NFC, we got two 4-4 teams that seem to be trending in completely different directions, the Niners being from the NFC West, have a much tougher path to that the playoff run that they're hoping for with two losses in a row. And how much trouble are they in now as the Saints continue to rise?
Yeah, the Saints are rising, and in the NFC South, you know, as we've said, rising to 8-8, 9-7 will probably be
make
all you need to ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, and have a home game on top of it. So they're going to play in the dome.
It's not fair.
San Francisco, I think they're an interesting case study because they're going to get healthier and they're going to get Alden Smith back soon. And so that defense that's been not quite what we're used to seeing from the Niners might turn back to being the 49ers again. And in the meantime, they've maybe developed some depth along the way. I'm looking at a guy like Chris Borland, for example, their third-round rookie.
He was great last week.
Yeah, 18 tackles, and tackles are such an overrated statistic. But when you put on the film, it backed up. He looked that productive. He was in on everything.
Yeah,
maybe he needs to get a little sharper in coverage, but he was great everywhere else.
And tackles may be overrated, but 18 means you're always around the ball. So,
yeah, you're
I mean,
doing
something.
When you have 18 tackles and the opponent the Rams, in this case, gained 193 yards total, then those tackles do mean something because they can't possibly be coming way downfield. They call those, by the way, I heard this when I first went to NFL films, they call those Barrett Rude tackles when they go way down film, way downfield.
Interesting.
Remember Barrett Rude?
No.
He was a journeyman. Well, not a journeyman. He played for the Bucks. He was pretty good for one. He went on the Titans. I think he's out of the league. He was one of those, I mean, he's one of those productive guys. He's 4 or 5 years ago. You'd remember him if you saw that. You'd go, oh, yeah,
sure, Barrett Rude. But anyway, I mean, that being said, this defense isn't that bad. I mean, look, they're third in passing yards allowed, 206.3 per game, and fifth in rushing yards allowed.
Are they that high at 85.6?
Yeah, so, I mean, the defense hasn't taken that big of a step back. It's the offense, which hasn't had a ton of losses. That offensive line has only played one quarter together. The projected offensive line of starters has only played one quarter together this season.
So they have had some losses.
Right,
then.
But that's it. Other than that, the Niners haven't changed that much on that side of the ball. It doesn't seem to make sense to me.
I think they're finding an identity, though, or trying to, because they added some wide receivers and they went to more spread passing stuff, which we thought they would do, and it didn't go well because Kaepernick's not that kind of quarterback. And so then they thought, we'll go back to the run. And that seems to go well, but they haven't committed going all the way back to the run. They waver. They go back and forth. Now, here's what I think they need to do this week against the Saints. I think they do need to go back to that ground game. For one, you're in New Orleans, so keeping the breeze and the offense off the field isn't the worst thing. For two, they were horrendous in pass protection last week against the Rams, and part of that was Kaepernick was horrendous and his pocket poise at times.
Luckily, exactly. I was going to say, luckily Austin Davis wasn't incredible.
Yeah, you
last
do this
week
every
either.
Show. You take a shot. You work in a shot on Austin Davis.
Well, because you were praising him in the early portions of the season.
And his, you know what? Each week, his limitations have become a little bit more and more apparent.
Which is going to happen. I mean, that's...
Yeah, and that's the difference between an Austin Davis and a Colin Kaepernick, and why... With the Niners, who were equally bad on offense as the Rams were in that game last week, at least you feel like the Niners have a chance to bounce back because Kaepernick does have some unusual skills. But I'm telling you, John, he's such a randomized player. The Niners are going to always be inconsistent as long as they rely heavily on him just because he's an inconsistent field reader.
Right, and the fact that he hasn't been able to find that consistency at all, I think, is a direct result of the offensive line being in flux. And listen to this. They've allowed 14 sacks over the last two games.
Some of those are on Kaepernick.
Okay, fair enough. But last week against
St. Louis,
yeah, they allowed 8 sacks, okay? And I think it was Joe Staley said, you know, they were just blitzing us all the time. But 5 of those 8 stats or sacks, according to ESPN, were from 4-man pressures.
Yeah, but my guess is that ESPN stats flawed because they probably were not from 4-man, actual true 4-man pressures. They were from 4 men wound up rushing, but they looked like blitzes. And actually, we talked with Laurinaitis about one of those plays.
Yeah, it's actually a perfect segue.
Yeah,
huh?
We'll do the interview right after this because he talked about that game. And there was one where he improvised, he said, and showed blitz and then drafted out of it, and that caused that right tackle, Anthony Davis, to stand there and do nothing instead of block Hayes, the defensive end. And so there you get a sack, and that was probably out of a 4-man rush. So just be a little careful with these advanced metric stats because you don't always know how they come about. And Staley was right. The Rams were throwing a ton of blitzes at them. And a lot of them were cover zero blitzes, which the Niners will see in this game as well because Rob Ryan, they'll see it at times. Rob Ryan's willing to do that. He's not going to do it as much as Greg Williams did it last week. But it's the Niners there's a little bit of a blueprint on them this week. They're going to have to show that they can handle their pass protection. You want to do the Staley thing now?
Yeah, let's just go right now. Let's go with James Laurinaitis.
Laurinaitis thing, yeah.
So James Laurinaitis from the St. Louis Rams. Here's an interview that Andy did earlier this week.
Talking with Rams middle linebacker James Laurinaitis. And James, you guys are coming off an outstanding division win. You've got a big division game coming up against the Cardinals. But I want to go back to the Niner game and talk to you about two plays and get your insights on what happened to them. The first play was a third down on the second series where you faked a blitz or showed blitz before the snap and then retreated and took away an inside route by Vernon Davis. On that kind of play, how do you go about locating Davis there? Did you expect that route out of that formation, or did you have to hunt him up? And I'm curious, what would you have done if it were a different route, for example?
You know, within certain pressures, you know, in our zone pressures, you have certain rules. And you do a lot of, you know, film study on what are the favorite routes that certain guys run, what are the concepts they like, depending on down and distance and things of that nature. And so a lot of times you try to give similar looks to an offense of certain mannerisms when you're blitzing, certain mannerisms, try to do the same ones when you're not blitzing, to try to make sure that they can't key on you, because the same way that we key on them, you know, about certain stance things, you know, is a certain foot up, is a certain foot back, what are their stem of their routes look like, they key on us too. They can always say, hey, whenever, you know, Lornais does this, he's not coming. Whenever he does this, he is coming. You know, so we try to mirror it all up, get the protection to go a certain way, to get a advantageous kind of protection for the blitz that we have called, and then just kind of react and play your rules a lot of time. And if you happen to get a good feel for what they're going to do based on the formation and down distance, you can try to be more aggressive on certain routes.
How much of that comes from within the game plan? Like, you're working with Greg Williams during the week, and he says, okay, out of this formation, they tend to do this route. Or how much of it comes from you just noticing, like you talked about mannerisms and guys, how much of it comes from you just noticing Davis's mannerisms and you deciding on your own he's likely to do this route?
Yeah, you know, it's a little of both. I mean, our staff does a phenomenal job doing presentations, you know, during the week on tendencies, on what certain things they like to do. They'll show us pictures, they'll show us film, and then you have to do your own individual film study as well. Greg always says, you know, hey, if you're going to go into a boxing match with somebody, you're going to want to know everything about that guy before you go to fight him. You know, you should know that about your individual opponents, because you're going to a basically football game is basically like a fist fight in a phone booth. You're going in there and you're going out there battling against the same guys over and over. Why not try to know everything about them? And so he really challenges you to know the ins and outs of all the individual matchups that you'll have, as well the stuff within the team scheme. So I'd say it's, you know, it's a little bit of both. You get a head start, you try to watch film on your own, get an idea of what you're going to do, and then when the coaches present, I always like to see, hey, you know, they agreed with me on this stuff, you know, what was different that I didn't see, and why did I miss it, you know, and you kind of go back and finish it all up at the end of the week.
So the second play I want to talk about, and it's kind of on the same thread, was the third sack you guys had on Kaepernick. You had eight, this was the third one, and you showed blitz before the snap here, and right tackle Anthony Davis totally reacted to that and left William Hayes untouched off the edge as you drop back into coverage. On that play, was it, and we're just trying to give listeners an idea of how much structure goes into football and how much of it is playing by feel and rhythm. On that play, was that something with you showing blitz that is part of the play design and part of the game plan, or is that something you improvised and had the freedom to do?
No, that was just total improv there. You know, I think on that play I was just in man coverage, and we had shown a blitz against Kansas City the week before where I walked up in the line, and you know, usually when I had done that, I hadn't come. You know, usually I'd had the back man to man or something like that. And last week we had a little kind of a game with me and the 2D tackles, and I came free, but Alex had just gotten the ball off, and so this week I said, hey, you know, when I walk up, I'm going to try to give similar mannerisms because they won't know whether that's coming or whether I'm in man. Because when you play a team like the 49ers, they know my mannerisms when I'm in man-to-man and when we break looks of zone and man and stuff like that. And so when I walked up, I tried to give the appearance that I was going to blitz through that B-gap there. And you're right, it's just that little hitch on Anthony Davis allowed Will to come free.
Something that all teams do now these days, and that your opponent this week does maybe better than any team, is unbalanced formations in the Arizona Cardinals being the opponent, of course, unbalanced formations with their wide receivers, like trips receivers with a closed formation to the other side. But those trips bunches especially, teams more and more are getting matchups of wide receivers on linebackers, which is what the offense wants. As a middle linebacker preparing for this during the week, do you get your focus more on preparing to just be in coverage against receivers and finding ways to survive that and thrive in that? Or is there more focus on what can we do schematically to prevent those mismatches in the first place?
Yeah, you know, they present some different challenges for sure. I think, you know, whenever you're in zone calls any single week, you're going to be matched up against a wideout, you know, here and again. And those situations, you know, a lot of times in zone defense, the objective is to make them throw the ball in front of you, which we call the no cover zone. You know, it's usually under 5 yards. You make teams be really patient and just check it down, check it down, check it down. You rally, you tackle. versus being overly aggressive sometimes when they hit a deep ball in behind you. So whenever you're, you know, matched up on a wideout in your zone, you know you're going to have help once the route develops, but you just got to hold off basically your zone and just basically know the route tree too. Know what are these guys like to run out of these bunches? You know, what are my threats? Where can they hurt me? And Arizona does a good job of with their play action with that. They'll do play action. They'll run their tight ends on deep overs, and I think Hausler runs pretty well. Almost runs like a wideout, 84, and so he can get all the way across the ball. And they'll do it with Floyd or and Larry. You know, they'll just do a deep over. And if you're a hook defender, you got to get deep and get out of there and hold that off and make them throw it down to the back. Now, saying that, you know, they got a pretty explosive running back that he can turn a check down into a 30-yard gain if you're not careful. So you just have to be aware of the setup, the formations, and just play fast off of those.
And that explosive running back you alluded to is Andre Ellington, and something else they do with Ellington is split him out wide, and they especially do it out of empty sets. Arizona does more empty sets than any team in the league. Feel totally free not to answer this question, James, but I remember Greg Williams in New Orleans did a lot of different stuff with blitzes to formation against empty sets and checks to blitzes. Do you expect him to do that this week, or do you expect more of a read and react approach on defense?
I think that you have a mixture of both. We've gotten a lot of no-back from teams throughout the year, even when we didn't expect it. We got some against Philly. We got some against the Niners in the first game. And I think you have to have different looks. You know, there's only so much you can do defensively. Sometimes you got to blitz it. Sometimes you got to make it look like a blitz and play three. Sometimes you got to play quarters. Sometimes you play two. Sometimes in the last game we went cover zero. You know, you just have to change it up. You can't let a team get a beat of, hey, whenever they go no back, they're going to be in this. This is where we can hurt them. And I think defenses that do that, you're just going to die a slow death. You're going to say, beat me, stab me, kill me. You know, if you're just going to play cover two the whole time, they go no back, they can check the ball over the middle of the field and get 5-7, 5-7, 5, you know what I mean? And you're not stopping it. And so as long as the team can't have a beat on you for everything you're going to do every single time, then I think that helps us out, because you're right, the Cardinals are going to go no back. They're going to try to see what our adjustment is, and then maybe the next time they do it, you have something else, and the next time you have something else, or and you go back to the first one. You always got to just be changing it up on them, especially when you play a team that you know you're going to see twice. You can't give them the same stuff over and over.
Sure, and speaking of teams that you play twice, I want to get you out on questions relating to quarterbacks in the NFC West, because I know you can give our listeners some good insight on that. A few weeks ago, I wrote an article about Kaepernick versus Manning, and this wasn't my opinion, but I went around and asked 12, 15 different coaches, defensive coaches in the league, who they would rather play against. And surprisingly to me, and I think to a lot of people, a strong majority of them said they'd rather play and prepare to play against Peyton Manning. Can you, as a guy who plays against Kaepernick, give some reason to that or explain why you think more coaches felt that way?
Well, I think it's two totally different beasts. I mean, Colin can definitely beat you with his legs. I have a ton of confidence in our defensive line. You know, we're built with extremely athletic ends, and with Aaron Donald added to our D-line, he's an extremely athletic D-tackle. So we have an ability to rush those guys, and we really do a good job against Kaepernick and Russell Wilson, those types of players that scramble. To me, it's more frustrating against Peyton because he's an offensive coordinator on the field. While you're not worried about him scrambling, very rarely are you able to get to him with any blitzes, because if you blitz him, he knows exactly where the weaknesses are. He gets the ball out so fast. And, you know, quite frankly, that's the frustrating thing, is when you feel like you can't get there. You don't have enough time to get there. Where sometimes those running guys like to run around and they hold the ball too long because they're so confident in their ability. So, you know, it just kind of depends. Kind of pick your poison, so to speak, on what do you want to attack. But I know personally playing against Peyton, he's extremely frustrating because he rarely holds the ball long enough to let you get to him.
And the other quarterback in your division, of course, you mentioned him, Russell Wilson. People, fans especially, I think, view Wilson and Kaepernick as two guys cut from the same cloth. To me, they're different players. I'm curious what you think on that, and if you agree that they're different players, in what ways are they different or most different?
Yeah, I think they're different. I think they're different scramblers. I think Russell scrambles to throw, and when he runs, he's a little more shifty, where I think Colin, if you line him up and tell him to run straight, you know, he's going to win the race. But They're different guys. Russell is he plays within the system very well. Kaepernick has a bullet for an arm, so they're people want to group them together because they're both athletic. But you're right, they are different. They got different schemes. They do different things. When they run the zone read, they run it differently. Kaepernick's gonna, when he pulls it, he's running it straight. He's gonna try to run around the edge, and you know if he takes it inside, he's gonna slide down where Russell feels like as long as he has air, he can make a move on him. He's pretty athletic with it. So I think they're different in that sense. But two good young quarterbacks, man, and I got respect for them. I just know that they're different beasts when you play them.
And we'd like to thank James for taking the time, as well as the Rams PR staff for helping us get that interview together. Yeah, the Rams have been a problem for a lot of teams, and they were a problem for the Niners, obviously. And the Niners, back-to-back losses, the New York Giants staying in the NFC, have lost three in a row, though. And that's a much bigger hole now, looking at the outlook of this team in Week 10, coming off that thrashing from the Colts. It doesn't look to be getting that much better.
No, it doesn't, because they're not entirely healthy, for one. Their offensive line has gotten inconsistent over that three-game span, enough to make me regret my Weston Richburg second-team All-Pro pick, finally. Finally, people. And did you say 40-10? I guess it was 40-24 against
right.
The Colts. I'm seeing. I turned it off at 40-10.
Wow. Up early.
Well, because there's no point in what you see stuff that's just misleading at the end of those types of games.
True.
Where I learned to do that is when I noticed that scouts at college games on blowouts were leaving at the blowout part of the game. You don't want to get a negative, a false image of something. I don't expect this one to end like that. I think it'll be closer, in part because Seattle just kept a very mediocre, not even that, a very bad Raiders team close in Seattle. So there's reason to think it. But clearly the Giants are trending in the wrong direction. And now here's Seattle, by the way, that has not played its best football this season, but still a chance to get to 6-3. And like I said with whoever it was a few teams ago about it's what's the Lions. What's impressive is when you can win games while not playing your best football, because at some point they will play their best football.
You know, what's interesting about the Seahawks is we've all talked about how that defense has taken a step back, but they haven't allowed more than 275 total yards of offense since that Week 6 loss to Dallas. So, I mean, there are three games in a row now where their opponent hasn't tipped over 300 yards of total offense. So we just disregard that?
No, don't disregard that. The Raiders could not move the ball on Seattle at all. That was overlooked.
Neither could Carolina.
The Raiders got cheap points off special teams. Carolina didn't get hardly any points. So that defense has been stellar. And keep in mind, Bobby Wagner's out. So they're playing a rotation of backup linebackers, young guys, who have looked okay, actually. Cam Chancellor's been unhealthy. He was out last week. His backup, Sheed, played very well, very well. And that's what's impressive to me. This is why I think Seattle's one of the best coached teams in the league. A great snapshot is their cornerbacks. And while we're thinking of it, Simon, who's been filling in for the injured Maxwell on the other side.
Supposedly incredibly thin at quarterback.
They're not, though. I mean, they're thin in names we recognize, but if you watch their output, Simon's been very good as well. So the guys, the backups that are filling in are playing just fine. And to me, that speaks to really good coaching at the position coach level. And something when you watch, this used to be true about the Giants wide receivers. And now it's a different coaching staff or at least offensively. And I don't know if it's as true as it was with the new system, but what I'm getting at, it's very true with the Seahawks defensive backs. And that is when all of the guys play with the same technique, they all have the same mechanics, playing style, so to speak, maneuvers and mechanisms. When you see that consistency from player to player, I've had a lot of coaches tell me that's the most obvious sign that guys are being taught a very specific way and are being taught very well. And like I said, the Giants back at the height of their passing game when Hakeem Nicks was viable for them, their receivers were all playing with the same type of route running technique, and they were excellent. And Eli Manning was really rolling. That's not true anymore. The Reuben Randall era is not quite at that level, but that's very true for the Seattle Seahawks secondary. And that's why you see them plug guy in after guy, and they all seem to thrive. It helps having Earl Thomas in the middle of the field behind them, too.
Well, and we've said trending a lot in this show. There's been a lot of trends. We've seen the Giants at the bottom go pretty close to the top and then dip back down. They had that three-game win streak when a lot of people were on this Giants bandwagon. But I think you were talking about those Giants receivers. I think it's obvious that this offense is a very different team without Rashad Jennings there in the backfield.
He gave them a shotgun running game presence, and not just shotgun, but the types of runs you can do out of that. And with Andre Williams, he's more of a traditional ball-carrying type of back, so it's less dimension to him. And that traditional ball-carrying stuff does not marry up as well to the three receiver sets that they want to run for their passing game.
Moving on to the 6-3 Steelers on the road against the Jets, 1-8. Not as flattering as that 6-3 record for the Steelers. But the Steelers may be the hottest team in football right now and are taking on probably the coldest one. I think that's fair to say. And Ben Roethlisberger has now completed over 75% of his passes for 12 touchdowns and 862 yards over these last 2 weeks. How has this happened? What is going on? Back-to-back AFC Offensive Player of the Week awards.
Yeah, and the league doesn't like to give those. No. Everybody gets a
first
trophy
time in
out.
His career.
Yeah, everyone gets a trophy, so we can't give it back-to-back. It's rare to see that. Rare to see back-to-back.
Well, back-to-back six touchdown games, I think you can probably hand it to them.
You can't argue with that. They've been legitimate six touchdown games, too. That's what I like. As I wrote in the MMQB thing this week, a lot of times when you see numbers like this, it's kind of fluky, like guys, like defenders have fallen down or something, or you had, you know, a trick play go your way, or running backs are taking screens to the house. Not with Pittsburgh. Roethlisberger is just throwing aces like that, and he's become such a good, the last few weeks, he's become such a good anticipation passer. It really makes all the people that criticize Todd Haley look stupid.
Yeah, I was going to say that, too, is because in week six when they lost to Cleveland, Steelers fans were done with Todd Haley. Done.
Yeah, that's fickle and that's out of touch.
Now, did he change anything that Cleveland game, or has everything just kind of returned to?
They did get some better personnel, but they got a little more speed with the Martavis Bryant injected a wide receiver. I don't know if Bryant was in that Cleveland game or not. I don't recall, but Bryant's been more prominent in the game plan the last few weeks, and that's shown. But Todd, I've always liked Todd Haley as a offensive coach. I think he's been fine. I get that there's been some bumps in the roads with them in Pittsburgh, but to just dismiss the guy and say he's a problem, we need someone new, football doesn't work that way. It can't work that way. And there's a lot of off-season foundation laying that's gone on with this team, and we're starting to see it bear fruit now.
And how about that Steelers defense? Now without Polamalu this next week, does that change a lot? Is that going to be a problem here against the Jets?
Not against the Jets. I mean, Michael Vick's not a sharp field reader. He's not an anticipation passer, so you don't necessarily have to worry about as much in the back end. You can play fundamentally sound football and be just fine, and I think Will Allen gives them that chance. And I was really encouraged by the way their cornerbacks played against Baltimore last week. You know, Cortez Allen, what a fall from grace he's had in 2 months. He's been awful this season, so he deserves the benching. And it's still shocking to see him not playing at all after you get a big 5-year contract, I think it was. But those guys that replaced him, I think it's going to stay for a while. I think he's going to ride the bench for a little while because Bryce McCain's played well. William Gay's having his best season as a pro. And Antoine Blake has held up just fine as the nickelback, and then Ike Taylor will return at some point, not this week. It's the secondary's getting its head above water, or at least we started to see it last week. And a big reason why is because the pass rush has returned for Pittsburgh. And what a difference. I mean, we talked about with the Bears, you can't play zone defense without a pass rush. The Steelers,
kind of the same situation.
Similar. They don't play quite the same type of zone, and really they're so good at matchup zones on the back end that they can get away without having a pass rush, but they're not the Steelers. They're 8-8 type of team without a pass rush, as we've seen. Now they're back, and I'm real curious to see if James Harrison can maintain what he's shown the last 2 weeks. I have no idea if he can or not. I don't think anybody does.
Now, the team that Pittsburgh just beat, the Baltimore Ravens, are hosting a Titans team that turned its season over to a 6th-round rookie quarterback. Andy, we talked a little bit about Zach Mettenberger, but not much on the show yet. The Titans were off last week, and the week before, they announced Mettenberger right as we're finishing, which
certainly didn't help.
I think I texted you about, now Mettenberger is the starter in Tennessee. So what do you think?
We had predicted it, though.
Yeah, well, what do you think of the LSU product? I mean, it kind of seems like the no-brainer, seeing as Charlie Whitehurst is certainly not the future in Tennessee.
Well, the one game report so far on Mettenberger, the game against the Texans, He showed the composure of a strong pocket passer, which we all knew he was coming out of LSU. I like that he had some mental toughness to him in that he made mistakes and was willing to keep playing the position. He didn't change his style of play in a good way. He did show what young quarterbacks and backups tend to show, with guys that don't have a lot of reps yet, and that is an inability to get off of covered reads quick enough. You got to learn to eliminate what's not open. You got to process that information quickly in the NFL. That's Tom Brady's brilliant at that. That's why he's so good. Mettenberger's not there yet, but that will, I think that will improve with more reps, and he's playing under an offensive coach in Ken Whisenhunt.
So if you're the Baltimore Ravens, is this a clear disguised attack from the defense then when you're going up against Mettenberger?
Just like, what's the best way to combat him,
right? Just to confuse him? Is that what you're doing here?
It's hard to say whether that's the way to play him or not. I mean, it's off of just one game. You probably would be. I mean, you want to. I think anytime it's a young guy, you want to do that. I don't know if that's going to be the way to confuse Mettenberger or to approach him for the rest of his career, if he projects to that kind of guy, if he's a robotic passer or not. But I would expect the Ravens to throw a few things different at him for that reason, that he's young, but also because Baltimore's secondary is a little shorthanded right now. And one way to get by with a shorthanded secondary when you have a good front seven is to do some disguises and bring different pressure packages and try to win with a chess match approach.
We're not totally ready to jump away from the Baltimore Ravens, are we, after that loss to the Steelers? Please?
No, I still think they're the best team in the AFC North.
I as do I, too.
You agree? I thought you've been a Bengals guy all year.
No. I've been high on the Ravens. You need to go back and listen to some podcasts.
Or just listen when you're talking to me here.
Maybe I'm the only one listening
to
this
damn
show.
I like Baltimore. I think they're the most talented defense, and I think it will come together and be a dominant unit by the end of the season. And then they can run the ball, which will help them in the cold weather games. And Joe Flacco, I trust guys with big-time arms. I just do.
Well, and he looks a lot more comfortable, too, this season. I think we've talked about this before and what really is comfortability. But, I mean, when pressured and that pocket seems to condense, sort of how Phillip Rivers stands there and gets hit almost every
Flacco's
time.
Flacco's like that, too.
Yeah.
And Mettenberger, by the way, will be one of those guys. He's going to be a tough pocket passer as well.
And from one rookie quarterback to another, Blake Bortles, he's still suffering slightly from an injured wrist and hasn't been incredible this season, throwing 13 interceptions.
Well, some of those interceptions have been incredible.
Yeah, he's put a little something on them. But the Jags are facing a Cowboys defense that last week gave up 28 points to the Cardinals, and the week before that gave up a late run by the great Colt McCoy, taking back Texas. So are we starting to see this D to crack? Sort of have we've been on this all season that eventually that Cowboys defense was going to, you know, recede.
Well, the reason I've been saying it's because at some point their lack of edge rushing speed will become a problem. And you could say that happened a little bit against Arizona. In fact, I think it did. I watched that film, and that was one of my notes, is that they got interior pressure. Tyrone Crawford's turning into a pretty good three technique. Henry Melton is starting to look like Henry Melton again. So the inside push is there. But you've got to be able to get pressure from the outside. I mean, inside's probably better than outside, but outside's where the consistency comes from. And DeMarcus Lawrence is now in the lineup. He looked okay in run defense, didn't show a whole lot in the pass game. Way too early to judge him, of course.
Yeah, sure.
Like 20-something snaps already in his first game. But the Cardinals went to a bunch of empty sets against the Cowboys, and the Cardinals don't have a dominant offensive line. And they were extremely successful out of those empty sets, which means that when you go to an empty set, there's no running back there, obviously, and so there's no one to help in pass pro. So you're going to get pretty much one-on-one matchups across the board, or at least at most of the positions, and certainly at any wide nine defensive end positions. The Cowboys did nothing with those one-on-one matchups last week, and now so that's their issue. Now, John, I don't know if that's going to be as big of a problem against Jacksonville. I think we're talking more about Cowboys as a whole
moving
here,
forward,
right?
Yeah. Well, what I think is interesting about this Cowboys defense too is they still allowed less total yards than their yearly average. Okay, not by
in the
much,
last two games,
but for the last two, well, at least against the Cardinals. The Cardinals. The yearly average is around 350, and they around 340 against the Cardinals. All I'm saying though is that it's not been like this defense has been dazzling for the Cowboys. It's kind of been a bend, don't break kind of thing, right?
And it's the running game for the Cowboys has kept the defense off the field, and so that's masked some of the issues. They're actually, I've heard in places that they're statistically it's the same defensive output as last year, just fewer snaps. I don't think defense works that way necessarily, but I get the general sentiment of it. It's a very, at the end of the day, it's a very, very average defense, and we'll see if they can get by with that. I don't think they can. I think they're going to have to get – they've been getting enough from their offense already, though, so I guess I can't say they need more from the offense. They just – this formula – this is their formula, though. It's not – they're not going to get better. There's no reason to think they're going to get better on defense.
Did you watch that Cardinals-Cowboys game live?
No, I watched it on film.
Oh, that's too bad, because then you would have seen Orlando Scandrick screaming, throwing his helmet on the sidelines.
Oh, did he do that? Did we have a Scandrick meltdown?
Yeah, it did. Well, which is interesting because us being from Boise, that might be the most Boise State dense team in the whole NFL.
Scandrick doesn't like people to know that he's from
Boise.
Things did not end well at Boise State for him.
Scandrick, yeah. And when it comes to the Jaguars, who knows how much longer Gus Bradley will be there. And the new coach for the Oakland Raiders, interim head coach Tony Sparano, seems to have those players on his side since the firing of Dennis Allen. But does it look like that much different of a team since that four-game stint with Allen?
Maybe a little more open offensively, but I don't know if that has anything to do with Allen being gone. Allen was a defensive guy. That Oakland team has played hard for Sperano, and they played hard for Dennis Allen, too.
And I was surprised that they fired Allen when he finally got his quarterback in Derek Carr, but it is interesting that with Sperano, he's completing nearly 60% of his passes, which is lower than when he was with Allen.
He's throwing more balls downfield, though.
Yeah, the production is a lot more with 977 yards to the 718 yards during the same span. And then 7 touchdowns to 4 touchdowns and less interceptions. So he's playing better for Sperano.
Carr is a maturing quarterback, and I could see him maturing consistently and steadily. Kind of like, kind of like an Andy Dalton, but I don't know if that's a great example because of the playoff issues with Dalton and people have a skewed perspective of him. Anyway, you get what I'm saying, though. Carr's a guy that's getting better step by step. Tannehill's a good example. Tannehill has matured very gradually in a positive way, the way that quarterbacks used to mature. And I think Carr will be that kind of guy for them. I really like David Carr. Derek Carr. That's going to happen.
Ghost of
he's heard that
pass.
Yeah, he's heard that his whole life, I'm sure. I really like the quarterback on the other team in this game better, though.
Oh, yeah. Do you know his name, Peyton Manning?
Yeah, Peyton Manning. And I'm not. Okay. I know what your next question is going to be, John. And I'm not at all worried about Denver. I don't think New England laid a blueprint or anything like that.
He can't play in cold weather.
No,
climate thing is so stupid.
Yeah, that's
I'm so
stupid.
Tired of that. And that's because he lost to New England over those stretch of playoff games there in the early 2000s. So.
Right. Now, maybe it's not the best week for us to like be just negating that or dismissing it because he did lose in cold weather again
that's
last
true.
Week.
I mean,
but I don't think
it
was I don't think the cold weather is what cost him the game. I think his inability to read that zone blitz when he threw the ball to Ninkovich was a big factor in the game. And the fact that they abandoned the run, I think that caught up to him a little bit. Just a little bit, though. There's nothing to worry about with Denver. Let's not get on that.
Yeah, and what I think was best about that loss is afterwards when Peyton was talking to the Denver play-by-play guy, David Logan, he said...
How do you know the name of the Denver play-by-play guy?
I'm a radio guy. You know these things. You get familiar.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, anyway, he said that he played bad, and that was he hasn't said that in a long time about his own play on the field.
Yeah,
Peyton Manning admitted he played bad, and that's going to happen. He's human.
And what were his numbers in playing bad? They were still over...
It's still Peyton Manning like.
Right, but some of them got inflated by the game situation. Not to be rude to Raider fans, and I know we have a lot of Raiders listeners, but this is an ideal bounce back week for Denver. I mean, if you are going to lose, you do want to go on the road against a downtrodden division opponent, a team you know well. And Manning has really had the Raiders number over the years because And Oakland has not done this as much this year, but they used to do a lot of third-level blitzes and very complex disguises and rotations. And that stuff just doesn't – you can't blitz Manning from deep like that because if he'll see the blitz. And unlike with Kaepernick where you want them to see the blitz, Manning, you don't want him to see the blitz because he's so good at reacting to it. So you need to disguise in shorter ways. That's why the Ninkovich interception was such a good play. Because he's coming from the line of scrimmage and dropping back. That's a short area disguise. That's harder to spot. And the eyes of the quarterback are not immediately looking there. The eyes of the quarterback look to the deep backfield, the safeties at first after the snap. So anyway, that's a bit of a rant there, but I would expect Oakland to not blitz, continue to not blitz their safeties because Manning's killed them on those plays in recent years.
We will see a lot of pressure from Khalil Mack, though, a guy we've had on this podcast before. How relatable is Khalil Mack to a guy like Von Miller, who's having an incredible season from
very
the outside?
Very relatable. Very relatable.
In what ways?
In short area explosiveness athletically. They can go laterally in short areas. They can dip under blocks. They can push through blocks, underrated bull rush. Sinewy ability to change directions. They're just great athletes.
It's so fun to watch, too.
Yeah, and they both play. I had this discussion with Adam Dorson, the magazine editor at SI, because we're filling out – there weren't enough people upset with my all-pro team on the MMQB, so now I get to do three or four different all-pro teams for the magazine this week. And one of them is the regular all-pro team, and then the other one's going to be the all-pro team for guys 3 years and less in the league. And I'm putting Mac on there, and he wanted to know at what position. And I wanted to say, I wanted to put 12 guys on each side of the ball because I couldn't fit positions. But anyway, Mac and Von Miller were the guys we discussed because they're what position, you know, what. And I think opponents have this issue with them a little bit as well. They're guys you have to account for every snap, and you say, what position do they play? Are they defensive end or are they linebacker? And we know where they'll be on certain packages, but they can dominate you from both spots, which means they can dominate you in very different ways.
Yeah, Andy, and like the Raiders, the Buccaneers have relied heavily on a young quarterback in Mike Glennon, but he's lost the job. Josh McCown, veteran QB, is back, and Lovie Smith is going with McCown. Do you agree with taking Glennon out and going with Josh McCown after he's been out for weeks?
Yes, I do. And I just watched the Bucs film 20 minutes before we recorded this podcast. So I'm fresh off of Glennon, and he had a very bad game against Kansas City.
Mike Evans looked like he could have potentially had like 6 touchdowns if they would have been on the money.
Or I said Kansas City, Cleveland. Yeah, and if you can't get – look, I get that you can throw the ball in the vicinity of Evans and Vincent Jackson, but there were a lot of plays left on the field because the ball was thrown in the vicinity of them and not to where they could catch it, not to the pinpoint spot. Glennon struggled with ball placement, and that's been the case a little bit throughout the year because as his completion percentage shows, I think he's got to be in the low mid-50s, I'm guessing.
He is. He's 57.4.
He's high mid-50s.
Well, but McCown was 63, so there is some separation.
Anything under 60 is not great. Glennon's had several games in the around the 50% mark, but you can't miss throws that are there. And especially with that kind of offense where they run as many isolation routes as they do, they're counting on big plays downfield.
I think I love Mike Evans. I'm sold on
Mike
Evans.
How I feel about him yet. I go back and forth. To me, he looks a little bit – he reminds me of Malcolm Floyd.
For his size, he seems like he can control his body so well.
See, that's what I'm – yeah, he does. I'm getting used he reminds me of two guys.
Vincent Jackson, the guy across the field from
No. And I'm higher on Evans and Jackson this year. I don't think Jackson's playing very well. He reminds me of Malcolm Floyd and also Phillip Rivers for the sense that he's a great talent, but he looks awkward in the way he plays. And Rivers has that weird ball delivery that makes him look like he doesn't know how to play quarterback at times. To me, Evans looks that as a wide receiver.
When he's breaking for his route?
Or adjusting to balls. He just has a weird body comportment to him that I'm getting used to. And I'm trying very hard not to put it down as a negative because I think there is a lesson to learn there. Just because the guy looks funny doesn't mean he's not getting the job done. He's not very difficult to guard. Because Evans does get good separation for a guy of his build. Most of those guys wind up untangling from a quarterback as they're trying to go up and get a ball in the air. Evans can create space and let the ball come to him if he needs to. So I like the game. I'm not sold all the way, though. I'm struggling. He looks weird on film to me.
Well, when it comes to receivers, this is a fantasy must-watch between Tampa Bay and Atlanta.
That's selling it for Fox. Yeah, that's really good. And it's which receiving core would you take then, real quick?
Moving forward or this season? I think Roddy White's been pretty poor.
So you'd take Tampa Bay?
I would.
I'd take Atlanta this year.
Interesting.
Neither one's – they both have underachieved in their own way, so.
I think I would rather take – I think obviously Julio Jones is the best of the bunch.
Yes.
But I think Roddy White is also the bottom of the bunch.
Yeah, I would.
So do you want the best and the worst, Andy? Because I will take average all day. My life is based on average.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying there. Yeah, I take it. I take Atlanta. I think I even take Atlanta moving forward. I think. Yeah, Roddy White's. I'm not sold. I don't think
he's aging, man.
Everybody's
old.
Aging. I mean, we're all getting older.
You know, a lot of 30-plus wide receivers, though, aren't.
Yeah, I don't think he's washed up yet. I'm looking at his age real quick. I know we want to move on.
I'm going to guess 32?
He's 33. He just turned 33. Oh, if we'd done this last week, you would have been right.
I'm the king of ages.
Okay, that is a little older than I thought. Maybe. I don't know who I'd
take.
All right,
well, anyway, speaking of moving forward, the Eagles are now having to move forward with Mark Sanchez instead of Nick Foles, breaking that collarbone. Hosting the Carolina Panthers, who have that pesky little one on the end with that tie. 3-5-1.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah, can't stand
I like
it,
ties. I don't like ties and how they look.
I think Mark Sanchez can work.
I think the Eagles are going to be better with Sanchez than they are with Foles. No, I'm not trying. That's not a bold statement.
There you go. Someone's trying to get some Twitter followers.
I already tweeted that anyway.
Did you?
No, but I tweeted that while watching the Eagles-Texans film.
Yeah, they didn't change anything.
Except that their offense ran a little bit quicker. Look, Sanchez, for one, he's a little more athletic than Foles. He's not going to run around, so they're not going to get the Oregon offense effect, the Dennis Dixon stuff that they used to have, which Chip Kelly used to have. But they don't need that. They've shown that. What I mean when he's a little more athletic is he moves well within the pocket. He's quicker in his release, and he's quicker in his decisions. He eliminates what's not open much better than Foles has been doing this season. And I love the way Sanchez got through his progressions against Houston. That was coming off the bench. It was very impressive. Chip Kelly helps him out by making those progressions crystal clear. I think Sanchez works for what they want to do.
One, isn't Foles at times a mechanical nightmare in the way he throws and steps to his targets?
Yes, he is. He's inconsistent in his mechanics.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think it's funny how Blake Bortles is always compared to Ben Roethlisberger, but when you see the way he steps when he throws the ball, he reminds me just of Nick Foles. I think that's what I see.
There's some inconsistencies with both of them. I think Foles' mechanics have been more inconsistent than Bortles'. Almost, I'd say, by far. I mean, I think clearly, just because of the way, partly because Foles, some of those mechanical issues, and they were earlier in the year, to be fair to him, but some of them have come when it wasn't necessary, when he had a clean pocket to work with. And there was a report out that the Eagles were maybe cooling on Foles anyway before this injury. I'm not surprised by that. I don't think Foles was never as good as his numbers last year.
No. Oh, come on.
But
no one's as good as those numbers.
Well, some of these guys.
If Andrew Luck went 27-2, touchdown to interception,
that'd
I think
be
we'd
bad
say that
it means
probably
he's
probably coming down.
Right, we're going to have a discussion with Bedard next week. That'd be bad because it means he's not playing Andrew Luck style of football.
There you
he's
go.
Not, he's not making every throw. Nick Foles, though, there are certain limitations as a passer with him, and I think it gets into the mental side, too, is that if you're going to be a limited passer physically, and he's not super limited, but he's not Flacco, if you're going to be that, you have to have a sharp mind, you have to be an anticipation guy, and he hasn't quite developed that yet. He might have a fine NFL career somewhere. I think for now, for what they need to do in Philadelphia, I think they're just fine with Mark Sanchez.
Oh, do you think they stay with Mark Sanchez even once Nick Foles is
after
able to
this
come back?
Season?
Yeah. Well, I guess it all depends, but...
Oh, I'd love... Let's wait 3 or 4 weeks. I don't know.
Fair enough,
It's been 2 quarters of Sanchez.
Okay, what's up with Cam Newton? I mean, this is Monday night game, and I'm not crazy about the Panthers-Eagles for our Monday night game, but...
We had this a few years ago, too. Panthers-Eagles,
yeah, right.
I think, and it was also, like, disappointing then, wasn't it? Like, someone's record was not as good as expected or something?
Probably, I don't know.
Here's what's up with Cam Newton. I would almost guarantee you that we're going to get a John Gruden breakdown of Cam Newton's mechanical flaws.
Wait.
We're talking mechanical flaws on Foles. Newton has been very inconsistent.
10
there.
Of 28 last week.
Yeah,
10 of 28.
Did not throw the ball well.
Holy cow. That's
did not
incredible.
Throw the ball. And some of them were just flat out misses. He shouldn't be missing the throws that he's missing right now. It's not all on Newton, though, and I know that they're getting the left side of their offensive line back with Byron Bell at tackle and Amini Silatolu at guard. That's not going to fix everything. That's still not a great offensive line, and what we're seeing with this, what we saw the last few weeks with the offensive line when Bell was out, and what we'll continue to see is when it gets into obvious passing situations, they become a turnstile. Those tackles cannot block without chip block help. and Newton, what at some point the quarterback figures that out, and I think it changes the way they play it. I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of subconsciously what's going on with Newton's mechanical hiccups right now.
Yeah, and I guess we'll see if he's able to figure out that this week on Monday night against the Eagles. All right, guys, that's all we have for you this week. That's Week 10, the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast. I'm John Engle at Engle's Angle on Twitter. You can follow Andy at Andy_Benoit. If you still have some gripes about his all-pro team, be sure to let him know. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes to get it in your inbox every Thursday morning. We'll catch you next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.